into the last item of the day, item 16, Columbia River Summer Chinook briefing, public comments, and possible guidance. We're on your back.
We've got to stop meeting like this.
I know. Oh, that was funny.
That wasn't intended to be funny, Chair. Chair Smith, Commissioners, Directors, Ron Warren, Fish Program. I'm honored today to sit with Ryan Lothrop. I think I'm honored to sit here again. But Ryan is our new Columbia River Fishery Manager. He had previously been our Puget Sound Sport Fishery Manager, and just did an exemplary job in Puget Sound. I'm excited to see he and the rest of the team in the Columbia River and how they make a difference in how we communicate difficult issues with our constituents. So good luck, Ryan, and anything I can do to knock down some of the obstacles, please let me know. And then the Wiley vet, Bill Twight, who is leading up the Columbia River Management Unit in a new assignment and still representing the director in North Pacific issues. So glad to have both of you here. Thank you. So today we're going to talk about the Columbia River Summer Chinook, and most of this is more of a history than it has been a questions and answers since the commission meeting on April 13th, where we were asked to review the policy, give some responses, and then through conference calls provide specific answers to specific questions. And I'll try to tie all of that together at the end of the presentation, but this will go into a more in-depth look at Summer Chinook, and hope that you find this beneficial. So we're going to cover background and abundances, some of the historical fisheries, escapements, the policy and agreements with the Colville Tribe, as well as the expectations for 2018. So try to look back at how we are planning for the year that we're in right now, and then a summary. So I'll turn it over to Bill to take us through the bulk of the presentation.
Thanks, Ryan, and thanks, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. Summer Chinook are a Washington state stock nowadays. Formerly, they were Washington and Canada, but we changed the river in a way that made access to Canada a little more difficult. So they are kind of a uniquely our stock at this time. There's been some confusion about what a summer Chinook is in the past. Some of the last part of the Idaho spring Chinook were termed summer Chinook and actually combined with our fish, but they're very different fish. The Idaho fish that are late and are still termed sort of summer Chinook are actually, they are classic spring Chinook, yearling, young, and do what spring Chinook do. Our fish are definitely a lot more like fall Chinook in that most of them out-migrate as sub-yearlings. They tend to be more mainstem spawners than tributary spawners, and they have the levels of adaptability and diversity that fall Chinook show that spring Chinook don't show as much of. They're a separate, distinct population, and they're not listed under the Endangered Species Act, which gives us then the primary management authority for these fish in state waters. Obviously, we share that management authority with Oregon through the concurrent parts of the Columbia River, and equally we share it with our co-managers, particularly the Yakimas, who are, as you know, their ceded area includes a lot of the current Summer Chinook territory, as well as the Colville tribes, whose reservation borders on some of the most productive Summer Chinook and have now constructed the largest Summer Chinook hatchery. Starting tomorrow, every fish that crosses Bonneville Dam is a Summer Chinook by administrative order. But that's all by way of saying we're transitioning from our spring Chinook management season in the Columbia River and the fisheries into our summer Chinook, basically as we speak. Obviously, there's been summer Chinook tags crossing already, and the tail end of the spring Chinook run goes past, too. But and then, as I summer Chinook were the Chinook, really, in many of the years. They were the most abundant of all the Chinook species back in the pre-dammed Columbia River system. When you heard of very large numbers of Chinook returning, the bulk of them were coming back in the summer and were headed for the upper Columbia, most of them above Coulee and actually in Canadian waters, but there was still substantial spawning. They've had a tough road. Their numbers really, if this graph doesn't go back far enough to show the decline that we experienced in the 1960s and 70s, when we were watching the decline, the department closed all the fisheries ultimately. Commercial fisheries in the late 60s, recreational fisheries in the early 1970s. And so for this time period here that you see up until the year 2000, they essentially were not subject to any fishing. Some incidental catches both in the ocean and in river and fisheries directed at other species. But overall, we closed down fisheries early and we kept them closed to try to protect these fish. As you can tell, for several decades, that appeared to have no results whatsoever. And there's a couple of reasons for that. These fish, many of them originate from above nine dams, so they're passing nine dams both upstream and downstream. And particularly the downstream migrations for these fish were really high mortality events. We were not operating any part of the Columbia River system to facilitate passage of juvenile summer Chinook downstream until, and your counselor back there will remember these well, until we began a series of consultations through FERC with the mid-Columbia PUDs that operate five of the nine dams that they pass and began to argue for measures in their FERC licenses that ensured improved passage, primarily through spill, but in later years, construction of fish passage devices as well. And also ordered them to begin to contribute money to mitigation hatcheries. And we constructed several mitigation facilities in the upper Columbia, combinations of broodstock taking stations, rearing ponds, etc. That work began in the 1980s, and for another decade, that showed almost no promise and almost no results. That was largely because the work was still underway. We were still honing how to do it well, but equally because conditions in the ocean in the 1990s were not conducive to survival of summer Chinook. And so the programs were coming under a fair amount of criticism. You're putting all this money into doing this. We're spending all this money on passage and spill, and we're not getting any results. In 2000, when the ocean changed dramatically from the 1990s, we instantly saw those results, and that's when we actually began to open fisheries. The very first recreational fisheries we reopened for these were above Priest Rapids Dam. And within a couple of years after that, the consistently much stronger returns allowed us to begin to open fisheries below Bonneville. Sorry for the bit of history lesson there, and I, as usual, got ahead of the slides in my talking. But it's been a long journey. This agency has been central to the recovery of summer Chinook. It's something I think we can all be proud of. And again, Bill Freymeyer put in a lot of work and a lot of time back then on getting those FERC licenses modified, and that formed the nucleus for summer Chinook recovery. Now we have pretty healthy fisheries. on these fairly substantial returns. These returns are consistently larger than the escapement goals for the runs. I'll talk a little bit about managing for escapement. There's a lot of nuances. But we consistently have healthy harvestable returns of summer Chinook, not unlike Hanford Reach Fall Chinook, which also, even though they're above a considerable number of dams, have been able to maintain productive populations. So typical fishery in recent years, and we just chose the 2016 sport fishery, is marked selective below Bonneville, and that's for two reasons. One is managing the fisheries in order to harvest the hatchery fish and maintain natural spawning escapement objectives, we've chosen to use marked selective fisheries too, because at least some of the downriver anglers prefer the longer seasons. There is some debate about this because the mark rates are fairly low, and other anglers would prefer just to have a shorter season but be able to harvest everything. There is some concern about releasing unmarked fish in the warming waters of June and July in the Columbia. But both ours and Oregon's fairly consistent policy in recent years has been marked selective fisheries. You can see we access a fair number of adults kept, but you can also see there's a fairly high release. And we are typically able to use most of the mortalities that are allocated to this fishery through commission policy. Then we also have Bonneville to Priest Rapid dams. Fisheries, they're not that large for summer Chinook. again, they offer fairly significant opportunity. And then finally, the primary focus of the fisheries by year policy is the above Priest Rapids dam portions. You can see that in some years, like 2016, we're catching as many below Priest Rapids as above, but we do manage the fisheries so that the sport fishery above Priest Rapids dam gets its allocation first, and then if there's still fish in the run, that's when we emphasize the downstream fisheries. And those are fairly lengthy fisheries above Priest Rapids, and I think in the past you've heard a lot of testimony about the importance of those fisheries to the area and to the local economies. As I mentioned, managing for escapement's a bit complicated. We've got several different primary rivers that summer Chinook spawn in. The tributary rivers that are most important are the Wenatchee, the Methow, and the Okanagan. There is some levels of spawning in the Entiat and Chelan, and we believe there's also some spawning in the mainstem Columbia. We haven't been able to get a hand on that, but we've got really good sampling of the other areas. We've established production goals for each of those areas, and we have a varying record of performance at achieving those goals. We've consistently come in below goals on the Wenatchee. We consistently come in fairly near goal on the Methow, and we consistently come in well above goal on the Okanagan. And I don't think we have that quite figured out as to why. It's almost counterintuitive in terms of the Okanagan fish have the longest distance to travel in terms of dams and distance, and they also enter into some of the warmest water in all those tributaries. But it's a very productive system for summer Chinook. It's been a focus point of a lot of our enhancement work as well. But these are natural origin spawners that I'm talking about here. The overall management goal that we've adopted for USV Oregon is 20,000 combined hatchery and natural origin fish just for escapement. We've been exceeding that routinely and providing healthy fisheries upstream of Priest Rapids Dam. But the ability to achieve those individual goals really does depend on all of our major fisheries, all the major non-treaty fisheries being marked selective. The tribal fishery is not marked selective for these fish. So this will just give you a sense of how we've done in terms of returns. And in the years when we've needed to pass a lot of fish through to Priest Rapids Dam, we've been able to do that. And that we've been consistently achieving, not just achieving the goal, but achieving a large enough returns to provide healthy harvests throughout the river system. And then here's the in-depth look at the natural origin escapement. You can see that pattern that I described to you earlier, with the Wenatchee fish still falling short, so we're still working pretty hard to emphasize that part of the return, while we're seeing very healthy Okanagan natural production escapements and Methow escapements that are meeting the goal. But as long as we're having to work this hard to provide those Wenatchee fish, you can see that's one of the primary reasons for having this be a marked selective fishery, to minimize the impact on the natural fish heading back to the Wenatchee in particular. But also just be able to meet our Methow goal while still achieving harvest on the hatchery fish that are produced out of several places, including Chief Joe Hatchery. And who takes over here?
I thought you were going to continue with policy.
Okay.
I have Ryan with the next slide.
So there are several policies. There are two written policies that govern how we manage these, and then one unwritten one. It's written, but it's still in draft form. And that latter policy actually is the one that Commissioner Graybill asked to have circulated to all of you so that you could see some of the additional background. But the two formal signed policies are one that you adopted, and that's C3620, and that is based on the natural escapement goals, the natural production targets that have been set, both for numbers of spawners as well as for PHAS. And I didn't have a slide showing that, but we also have PHAS objectives for each of these that we've been meeting also with varied success, better in some systems than others. But this one is the one that specifies how non-treaty sharing will occur above and below Priest Rapids, and then also specifies recreational and commercial allocations below Priest Rapids. Similarly, we have an agreement that we developed about a decade ago with the Colville tribes. It's an allocation agreement, and it's allocation of the fish that actually return to their waters. All their fisheries are on reservation, or in the waters that border their reservation. And it specifies, in addition to the allocations of summer Chinook, in addition to ensuring them a return both of the natural origin summer Chinook of the Okanagan, also ensuring that they get a portion of the Chief Joseph hatchery production, that's the hatchery they worked hard to have constructed and that they operate. But in addition to that, it also specifies what our respective roles are concerning management of those natural populations, habitat projects in the area, hatchery production, and as well enforcement. So it's a fairly broadly encompassing agreement, but just for those. And then finally, the third document that was never signed as an actual plan but has served as working guidance to the staff who manage the fisheries in the Upper Columbia is called the Upper Columbia Fish Management Plan, and it provides specificity similar to the Colville Agreement, which only addresses the Okanagan and the adjoining river. It provides similar specificity for the Wenatchee and the Methow as well, and describes how not just summer Chinook, but also sockeye, steelhead, and other fisheries are to be prosecuted in the Upper Columbia. That's the policy as well that you, the commission, requested that we review and revise at a meeting last fall, and we're engaged in that now. So you'll be seeing that policy again when staff has completed their review and completed their proposed revisions.
Thanks, Bill. Chair, commissioners, I have a couple slides to go over, then we'll pass it off to Ron to take it home. So this slide here essentially is a snippet from the North of Falcon model for the summer Chinook fisheries. This is the non-tribal expectations. It adjusts the forecast. There is, you can see, 67,000. Majority are hatchery stocks. And as your forecast increases or decreases, it obviously changes the amount of fish that can be harvested within different fisheries. If you specifically look at below Priest Rapids, that's one-third of the non-tribal harvest is permitted there. And above Priest Rapids, it's about two-thirds. I guess also with below Priest Rapids, you have an 80-20 percent allocation for recreation versus commercial. And the other point on this slide to be aware of is the wild component within the harvest cells. So you can see starting at 187, that's your release mortality, essentially your dead fish, because we're fishing marked selectively in sport fisheries. So I guess the important part of this slide is that commercial line where it has 708 fish. So that's a non-selective fishery that has been modeled, 389 hatchery fish and 319 wild fish. So on the next slide here, I'm just going to kind of compare gear types. Essentially what this is comparing gill net versus an alternative gear. And in this case, we're just looking at seine fisheries. So the first bullet point there is the steelhead mortality rate. That's the difference between the two different gear types. For purse seine and beach seine, we have studies that have occurred during the fall fisheries, so August and September, and you have a 2% mortality rate on purse seine and 5% on beach seine. During the summer gill net fishery, the mortality rate we use on steelhead is 59%. And then the fall, that's 38% and 45%, depending on your mesh size. So the 2014-15 purse seine study that occurred, that when you're looking at 200 sets, 9,700 Chinook encounters, that's a low mark rate of 38% with 503 steelhead encounters. So I use this to kind of compare to past fisheries regarding your encounter rates of steelhead. So basically the take-home message is seine fisheries have a higher encounter rate of steelhead, though the mortality rate is lower for seine fisheries. One factor to keep in mind is comparing the seine fisheries versus gill net here, we're looking at a different time frame, summer versus fall. So during the summer, you have a higher temperature, increases mortality rate. So that's just something to factor in on this slide.
Thank you, Ryan. So the potential commercial fishery in 2018 is a carryover from previous questions that have been asked in conference calls up to this point. And so I want to be mindful of the question and how this all got started back in April. Testimony by Robert Sudar here in the this particular room, and I was asked to review the policy for its flexibility on whether we could put or have a large mesh commercial gillnet fishery in the main stem river. I will tell the commission that that's been a difficult road just because the conference calls and not being able to be very thorough in the responses and not having the applicable time. I know that's provided quite a bit of consternation. I've caused a lot of consternation with people who have put lots and lots of hours in and have a lot of passion towards the fisheries that we're talking about. My answer was that through the adaptive management provisions of the policy that I believed that you could. I will remind the commission that during litigation after the policy was put into place that we reminded folks that this was not a rule, that it is flexibility and strong guidance given by the commission, and the adaptive management provisions were just that and gave staff flexibility to manage the resources that we were tasked with managing. So, so again, some of the previous questions that we were asked about mortality rates and X vessel value, what might the fleet look like during a summer fishery, those types of things. Obviously, a large mesh gillnet fishery for summer Chinook is not selective. You're intending to fish non-selectively. And but what it does do is that there's a reduced a reduced mortality rate because of its size on sockeye, steelhead, and low mortality in sturgeon. Because of the time it's been since a fishery like that took place, we had to look back in some records. We believe that there'd be 30 to 50 licenses that might fish if a fishery was offered, those people who don't go elsewhere to fish during the summer months. We believe that the estimated value is between $6 and $7 per pound. Average weight, 16 pounds, that's historic. From the anecdotal information that Commissioner Carpenter has from up north, maybe that's about half that this year. We're not sure. But we are watching that all the time as we see fish come across the dock. So the total X vessel value would be somewhere between $68,000 and $79,000 for Chinook. So In summary of the presentation, natural spawning numbers and PHAS levels are mixed. Obviously, as Bill described earlier in the presentation, mark selective fisheries are essential in reducing those hatchery origin spawners and meeting the goals that we have before us. Again, we look hard at how to manage the fishery every year. We need to continue to rely upon the adaptive management provisions that we have. And commission policy provides for adaptive management for commercial fisheries, emphasizing selectivity, species and mark selectiveness, species selective using large mesh nets is feasible. Mark selective net gear is currently not feasible. So that concludes our presentation, and we'd answer any questions that you might have.
Thanks again, guys. Open up, yes.
I think I made the request to have regional fishing managers here, and I was wondering if we could just hear from them, their perspective on managing these recreational fisheries, and how this question that we brought forward might impact the management. Chris and Chad? We'll put you on the spot.
Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director Stord. For the record, my name is Chad Jackson. I'm the Regional Fish Program Manager for Region 2, North Central Washington. And I'll let Chris introduce himself.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Don, the Region Fish Program Manager in Region 1, Spokane.
So, Commissioner Thornburn, did you have kind of a special, or not special, a certain question or aspect you'd like Chris and I to focus on, per se?
I have just been, this question has been brought forward. We're considering the commercial fishery, which has not been happening because of this whole question about selective gear. When we were in Wenatchee, we heard from the fishers about the importance of this this fishery. So just like to hear your perspective on, okay, if we have this commercial fishery that was allowed or was calculated in the current agreement or current plan that we have, is that going to make a difference for your management, for your fishers? And Dave, do you want to add something? Yeah.
Well, the concerns kind of were stemmed from, there's two things going on. The Columbia River Policy Review is underway now. That's being conducted. Starting last August, we had the Upper Columbia Fish Management Plan. That is currently being conducted as well. It's our concern that with the Upper Columbia Fish Management Plan, we're discovering escapement goals. The first document that came from that review is the production values of the Upper Columbia and Snake River Basin. But the next step would be to discover the escapement goals for all of those various fisheries too. But our concern is we're in the midst of these two reviews, and are we getting ahead of ourselves here in terms of considering fisheries this year even?
Well, I'll try and address that. That's very broad, there's many aspects. But let me see if I approach it this way. So on paper, the Summer Chinook were allocated according to North Falcon with guidance from USF Oregon. And so there is that component for the non-treaty commercial fishery below Priest Rapids Dam. And so not making a comment on the commercial gear type, but simply just by the numbers that 700 fish in a commercial harvest isn't going to have an impact. It's not going to come out of the Upper Columbia River share, and it's not going to have an impact on, in my opinion, on what's going to get passed above, as well as make or break, you know, anything from escapement. But that's just from the numbers. It's not a commentary on how they should be. But as far as the work that staff is looking into with the documents that Commissioner Graybill talked about, yeah, we are currently working on various plans, including the Colville WDFW agreement, what's commonly called the Upper Columbia River Management Plan, and Chris specifically is looking into allocation stuff with the snake. And that is kind of going on parallel tracks with the revision of the commission policy. And in my opinion, those are all have ties together in that while some may have completion dates that are quicker than others, you know, I think we should see what some of those do say, whether that has bearing on implementing a commercial fishery in 2018 or not, I can't say. But, you know, in order to probably have a path forward into the future on how we allocate these fisheries, probably should see what the reviews tell us from that.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Chad, do you want to add anything, Chris?
Yeah. Well, we maybe didn't talk about it, and Bill might have skimmed over it a little bit, but there's a spring-summer Chinook composite that's a piece of the Snake Basin, and I might be speaking a little bit for Idaho here, but this is a relationship thing for us in Region 1, which is to think about how we allow those wild spring summers to pass. And so I would say that we would definitely need to be conscious of structuring fisheries, whether it's recreational or commercial, in the lower river below McNary previous to passage into the Snake, on how we exploit those fish. The rest, I would echo Chad.
Seems like I've been down here a week already, so maybe I'm starting to lose it a little bit. And Ron, this might be a policy call, or maybe we were. This was answered at the meeting on Wednesday night. Maybe Dave brought it up. I know we talked about the Colville tribe. Have they been consulted about this potential summer gillnet fishery yet? And what would their feedback be if you, in fact, did that?
I wouldn't, to my knowledge, there hasn't been a formal conversation with the Colvilles on this particular fishery. It's my understanding they're aware of it, but you know, at this point, it's still proposal and it's still being discussed, and that it doesn't come out of the above Priest Rapids share, and therefore would not impact their allocation of summer Chinook for this year.
So you are going to wait until we get farther down the road? Is that, I mean, as far as...
Can I?
Well, let me finish, please. I have a follow-up, so yeah, if I may. Okay. What is the timing of that? And the only reason I ask that is staff time, et cetera, or where we are as far as putting something together or saying we can't. That's all I was trying to find out.
Vice Chair Carpenter, thank you. So we have not specifically talked to the Colville tribe about this because we didn't know where the commission was going to go. They certainly know what our preseason planning looks like, and certainly if we did this, we would want to do it in a way that we were mindful of the passage of the percentage of fish over the dam to assure upstream, or that we were going to hit our run size targets. We're looking at something in mid-July likely. That gives us a month to go have some conversations to put things together if we were going to do something like that this year.
Okay.
It was my belief that we had some time, depending on any commission.
That's good enough. Thank you.
You're done.
Commissioner Carpenter, your question raises a concern for me. I did attend a meeting with the tribe just for a very short
part of it. And there had been a small opening of a natural origin fishery for our anglers the previous year. And I know the tribe was not happy about that, or was concerned about the communication that it occurred, as I recall the discussion. So this commercial fishery will involve natural origin take. So can we start having the conversation with the tribe really soon? It kind of echoes what I heard from the tribe at that meeting.
If I could add one piece to that, you could probably answer them both together. Wasn't it in the pre-planning process that it was going to be a marked selective fishery for summer?
I don't believe so, Vice Chair.
I thought that's what we talked about in Portland, but
I don't. Do you guys have different information?
Recreational fishery will be marked selective.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I think that's what you're recalling.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And then we acknowledged that under the commission policy there was a set aside for a commercial fishery, but we did not do any planning about what that might look like.
Okay, perhaps I missed a meeting.
So, Commissioner Carpenter, so last year during the preseason North Falcon, when we talked with our constituency about fisheries above Priest Rapids Dam, we identified in the presentation the possibility of what we called a bubble fishery on the Okanagan. And it would be in season. It would be solely dependent upon our NOR run escapements over wells and what component of those were the Okanagan-bound fish. Mm-hmm. And we developed a prediction model, if you will, that accounted for several things, pre-spawn mortality, fallback, the fish that go to the meadow, and so forth. And that when that came to fruition, where we believed we had a surplus in the NOR escapement, that was our intentions with the fishery plans were shared with the Colvilles at that time. In the 2019 North of Falcon meeting, we had that same information in there as a placeholder that we would reevaluate that. And then recently we did have a meeting with the Colvilles about escapements, about what escapements potentially could trigger something like that. However, given the what our run predictions are, we're not highly confident that'll happen. But there has been some information sharing and stuff, and it's a kind of a long story, Commissioner Thornburn. I'd be happy to talk with you online. But, you know, there has been communication of this with the Colvilles.
Thank you for that.
I believe that you had your first meetings with the Colville. I shouldn't say the first meeting, but didn't you last Monday and Tuesday meet with Colville Tribe to talk, to address the escapement goals? As I understand, Chad, that we have our escapement goals, but they have their number. And we were directed by their head of Fish and Wildlife to get those two technical teams together and come to an agreement on what actual escapement goals we can agree on. And that process just started last week. Is that right?
So, we had a meeting on June 5th with the Colville Tribe. However, just as a clarification for the commission on summer Chinook escapement goals, there are established and, if you will, agreed to escapement goals under USV Oregon. The values that Bill presented earlier are those values. So the 13,500 for the Wenatchee composite,
right,
as well as the 1,500 for the Medhow and the 2,000 for the Okanagan. During the USV Oregon renegotiation, the agency did put in a proposal to modify those, and those were not adopted. Those values, in part, were developed with Colville Tribal Technical Staff. What we met about on Tuesday was kind of what I mentioned earlier, which was the initial intent was to talk about you know, whether those U.S. v. Oregon escapement goals are appropriate or whether they should be something different. And then it was a little bit more local about, you know, what escapement goals should we be thinking about as co-managers that would maybe allow for non-selective fisheries in, you know, like the Okanagan bubble fishery. And then as well as, you know, whether or not those have those numbers, you know, might need to be reflected in, you know, perhaps a department document. However, it's very, very early in that process. We're still working on some of that. There's nothing that's agreed to. There's nothing that's even been pushed up for evaluation. This was pretty very much a kickoff meeting.
But it is clear that for the at least the Wenatchee, Antioch, and Chelan, we're way below.
With the escapement goal, that's identified the target we are, but I will say that of those three systems, the Wenatchee system is we have the least understanding on, and I won't go so far to say that the goal is incorrect, but that one probably has the potentially the greatest error. Could be the right number, but as we gather information, you know, hopefully we'll know more. But by the numbers, yes, we routinely do not meet escapement in the Wenatchee Basin based off the goal that's identified in USV Oregon.
Right. Yeah. I guess my take on this is, you know, I certainly don't want to take away fishing opportunities from folks I know in the Okanagan or upset the Colville tribe, but I'm looking at it more as a equality in the policy that we allow adaptive management to correct things that we didn't quite get right, and it would appear to me we might not have gotten quite right that we allow a 20% commercial fishery catch, of which 75% may be used for main stem fisheries using non-gill net selective gear and fishing techniques that we didn't determine, and now we understand maybe there aren't such good ways to do that. That minimize impacts on sturgeon, steelhead, and sockeye, which I think what I was hearing that the gill net does pretty well at that. Given we take some wild fish, and given we'd have to measure that against how many fish are taken versus the, you know, if it's 700, how many are actually wild, and does that have an effect upstream? Of course. But I'm also hearing overall the numbers of escapement are pretty close for the total of what you're trying to get, even though they're lower on the Wenatchee. So I'm much more looking at this as a way to correct what to me is an inequality in the you know, the basic amounts that we set for commercial and rec in the main part of the policy, not trying to not think about upstream as well. But it would seem to me, you know, and then we talk about it in the policy about adaptive management being possible. Reconsideration of state-managed mainstream fisheries may take place under the following circumstances. Lower than anticipated catch and economic expectations to the commercial salmon fisheries. I think we'll probably hear about that from some of the folks here that that's in place. Biological, fiscal, or legal circumstances that delay or preclude implementation of alternative selective gear. I think that's, for the most part, been a combination of things, fiscal and biological. So we're not seeing that expected selective gear working out, being told by that commercial fishery that they can do this with less impact to some of the bycatch fish, given some impacts to the wild. So I guess I'd like to say, to me, that's the should be the focus. Or should we use adaptive management to correct an inequality in a plan that we did the best we could, but maybe it needs a little tweaking, a little adjustment.
Maybe why answer him?
You could just say yes.
No, that's what Jay's kind of.
No,
we need to get this.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't know why. Okay. Mr. Donnelly had raised an issue that perked my ears right up about the Idaho share. I realize I'm Washington State Game Commissioner and we are in Olympia, but I thoroughly also understand how much you guys work together. And would there be observers on boats to where we could gather data? And if we put gill nets in, and are the fish going to be Idaho fish or Washington fish or anything like that, to where we could prove ourselves right or wrong if we were to do this?
If the commission chose to move forward with some sort of a proposal on a commercial fishery, you can protect my relationship with Idaho, which I appreciate you thinking about. And when I say my, the state of Washington,
we're both ours.
Yeah. We work hard to maintain that simply by a temporal separation, timing in terms of the fishery. Because they're a spring-summer Chinook composite, they're early in the return on summer Chinook. So you'll see if you looked at pit tag returns at Bonneville today, the bulk of those fish, sawtooth, South Fork salmon, river, upper locksaw, those fish are coming right now. And so if we just wait and fish into the back end or middle portion of the summer Chinook run, you avoid 90%+ of those. And I would hope we would consider that, because some of those South Fork salmon, summer, spring summer composites are exceptionally weak stocks. And there isn't a lot of room for mortality on those. And I'm not even thinking that when we model summer Chinook, those are part of the conversation.
Okay. Well, that's all, you know, there again, because we could catch a lot of grief from Idaho over that very easily if we were at the wrong time. But if we had the data to back us up to say, no, these aren't your fish. But
if we get our timing wrong, my phone's going to ring several times.
And rightfully so.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay. I think let's move into the public comment. We do have a number of public, and we want to make sure we have time.
So, commissioners, I just, before you move or as you move into public comment, I wanted to remind you that you've received over 160 emails from constituents asking you to not provide a commercial gillnet fishery in the main stem Columbia River.
Thank you.
257. That's a better number than I have.
Okay, Richard Wagner and Irene Martin.
I don't think she is here.
Richard Wagner
had to leave.
Oh, okay, thank you. Lyle, we got you right time now.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
Reverend Martin, it's up to you to lead us.
As usual. Thank you. Commissioners, I've been here many times before testifying you, but for the record, my name is Irene Martin, and I am here to lend my support for a summer Chinook commercial fishing season in the lower Columbia River. Over the past 10 or 12 years, I have given you a number of scenarios based on different studies regarding social statistics on the Columbia River fishing communities. And I've provided a number of sources for that information. And those are outlined in my first paragraph in this. But today I'd like to share a new study with you, which is by United Way, which you probably are all aware of as being an organization, a nonprofit, that does a lot of work with poor and marginalized people. And they're set out to provide an accurate picture of poverty in America, and it's entitled Working Hard but Struggling to Survive. And this study has so far examined 16 states and hopes to complete all 50. Since Washington and Oregon were included in the study, I looked at the Wakayakum, Pacific, and Grays Harbor counties in Washington and Clatsop County in Oregon. The study goes beyond the federal definition of poverty levels, which have some shortcomings, and addresses the real issue, not just of poverty levels, but of what an acronym called ALICE, Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. These are the working poor, who have little or nothing in savings, can't always pay their bills, and for whom an unexpected medical or auto repair bill may represent a financial disaster. They cannot afford a basic survival budget. They represent a demographic often overlooked in traditional definitions of poverty, as they are above the federal poverty level, but still not financially viable. When you total it all up, if you look at the counties I've named, with both the people that are under the federal poverty level, plus the people that fall into that hardship level called ALICE, 34% of the families in Waukegan County, 50% of the families in Pacific County, 43% of the Grays Harbor County folks, and in Clatsop County, it's 48%, fall into that hardship category. The youngest group of people under the age of 25, tend to make up the largest portion of the poverty category. The study also notes that the general trend has been a flat recovery since 2010, the end of the Great Recession. Now, Policy 3620 was put forward as an economic boon to commercial fishing communities in these counties, with assurances of increased economic activity and income. None of the commercial economic promises or objectives, such as economically viable and effective alternative gear, expanded select areas, or increased select area production have been met. There is also no evidence that recreational fishing opportunities have contributed in any material way to the financial and social health of these communities. The statistics I've been citing from multiple sources for many years do not support any conclusion showing social and economic benefits to these communities from Policy 3620. Modification of the policy could begin now by opening up the Columbia River to a commercial summer Chinook season. While the returns may seem small from the perspective of non-residents of the affected counties, they would help alleviate some of the financial hardship we have been experiencing in our region. Thank you.
Thank you. Harry Barber, please, and Lyle.
Thank you, sir. Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Acting Director Storr, thank you for allowing me to address you again today. I would like to continue the talk concerning escape numbers for summer Chinook in the Columbia River. In the staff briefing, the escapement numbers are summarized by the statement, I quote, "During 2008 to 2017, interim escapement goals have been achieved on the Okanagan River in about half the years on the Methow, but has not been achieved for the combined Wenatchee, Endicott, Chelan population." This summary statement is taken from Table 1 out of the handbook, which covers a 10-year period. While the Priest Rapids Dam and the Okanagan escapement has been made each of these years, that's a good thing. A closer look at the Methow River shows it only made escapement in 2012, 13, and 15. That's 3 out of 10 years for 30%, not half the time. And the combined Wenatchee, Endicott, and Chelan Rivers has failed escapement completely. That's missing the mark on escapement. Even with the failed escapement, staff would like to use adaptive management clause of the Columbia River policy and take a giant step backwards to use non-selected large mesh gill nets on the river on these summer fish. These are Washington fish. They're coming back to Washington rivers, and Washington needs to protect these fish to make the required escapement levels. I would also like to remind the commission that the commercials are fishing in the safe areas and doing quite well. Last year, they got 5,467 fish. Okay, some of them are probably late spring fish, but they were after the 16th, so they're summer fish. And you do the math, £6 times, $6 times 16 pounds, that's $500,000. The previous 5 years, they have averaged 1,970 fish in the safe areas. To do the math, that's almost $190,000. So the safe areas are working well. And it was said earlier concerning mark selective, there's any fishery, recreation, or commercial that goes on these fish needs to be mark selective to reduce the number of wild fish, reduce the number of PHOS on the spawning ground. So please support the agreed upon by state policy, and please don't put large mesh gill nets back in on these summer fish. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Lyle. Ron Roller, please, and Perry.
Yeah, good afternoon. You've heard my spiel on bycatch before. I'll give it to you again. I'll give you an abbreviated version. There was an extensive observer program done in 2010 on summer Chinook, and the bycatch was 100% of the retained catch. I'll say it again, the bycatch is 100% of the retained catch. I think that's just obscene, and I can't imagine this commission approving a fishery where the bycatch is 100%. Now, I noticed in the staff report they came up with much lower numbers of steelhead, sturgeon, and sockeye, but that's not consistent with the big study that was done in 2010. They caught 297 steelhead, 660 sockeye, 4,700 sublegal sturgeon, 2,000 legal sturgeon, 660 oversized sturgeon, and a number of green sturgeon, which are ESA listed. So I think bycatch is a big issue. We heard some conversation earlier about Idaho. There are Snake River ESA listed Chinook that about 12% of that run comes up to Columbia and goes across Bonneville Dam after June 15th. So the potential is to impact those fish. And what I heard that you say today was, well, we'll have it in July, and then we can avoid those Idaho fish. That makes sense. However, you put a gillnet fishery in July, and you're in the peak of the A run steelhead, and I think that'll be just a disaster. You're going to have big numbers of steelhead going over Bonneville, and you got to put gillnets on them. I think that's just absolutely crazy. In terms of escapement numbers, we've heard that we're beating escapement. I think that is a very deceitful statement. You got a 20,000 escapement goal, half wild, half hatchery. And yet the Okanagan is 2,000. The Colvilles want 10,000, not 2,000. So those discussions, I'm sure, are going to be moving those numbers up. But the run is under escaped in the Wenatchee composite, and the only way you can increase escapement is with selective fishing. Thank you.
Yes.
2010 study you referred to, what was the mesh size on the gillnet?
It was large mesh. Maybe staff can help me. I believe it was 8-inch. I don't know if Ron knows or not. No.
Okay. James Wells, please. And Ron.
I'm Ron Roller. I'm a recreational fisherman. There's several different things that have come up. One of them, somebody stated the safe areas are working well. How well are they working for Washington fishermen? I mean, they're over in Oregon. They're working all right for Oregon fishermen. They're not doing anything for Washington fishermen. Another one, somebody said, this fishery will involve the take of wild fish. We need to do something about it. Every fishery in the Columbia River involves the take of wild fish, one way or another, either on direct tape or release mortality. The other thing, I think if you eliminated all harvest in the Columbia River of summer Chinook, you're not going to get your Wenatchee escapement. I mean, it's the numbers up there high. I don't know the reason why it's not getting there, but you're not going to get it by eliminating all harvest. So keeping a small harvest from happening won't make a big difference. The other thing is, Mark Selective Fisheries on Summer Chinook got started by the industry wanted to have a fishery that lasted longer, so they wanted to go to Mark Selective. Back then it wasn't a big problem because the mark rate was around 70%. 70% mark rate works pretty darn good on harvesting a fishery or enacting a fishery. Now harvest mark rates are down below 50%. Mark rate down there, that's a lot of fish to go through to keep your fish. I mean, you're running through a bunch of fish. We had that one year where temperatures were creating a problem, made some adjustments to that, but you can see that if your mark rate is less than 50%, you have to catch two to keep one, but you're not even there yet because you're not at 50%. 50% mark rate. What that it tells me that somebody's producing some fish somewhere naturally. All hatchery fish up there are clipped. They're, everything is clipped up there. I looked around and tried to find some place where they're putting out hatchery fish that were not clipped. There is none. So 50% mark rates, less than 50% mark rate says over half of your population is a wild fish. Now, one last thing. They've been dwindled down to there's an 80-20 split. If they don't catch that 20%, then if I was a tribal member, I would be looking to snap up that 20%. It brings me back to some 1980 court cases I sat in on and was right there involved in, based on foregone opportunity. If you don't harvest those fish, that's foregone opportunity.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Bryce Devine and James.
Commissioners, Jim Wells from Astoria, volunteer president of Salmon for All, commercial fisherman. I'm currently fishing in select areas. Gave up today to come up and talk to you guys. So I gave you the one-page handout. It's right there. We're going to talk about select area catches, winter, spring, summer, combined areas. Last year, yes, it was a great catch, about 17.6, second largest ever. It was a six-month season to get it done, long, long season. A lot of costs incurred to get those fish. This year, there's where we're at so far, about 8,000. That's through June 8th. That's about 40% of week 23 last year. And not tracking like last year at all. Ranks eighth place on a 20-year average right now. 2010, biggest year we ever saw, 25,000 springers, combined springer catch. Largest catch ever. That was before the Kitzhopper plan or any of the current enhancement. Everybody's still scratching their heads about where those fish came from. My point being, really erratic catches in there. You never know what's coming back. That's proved down below. We're going to look at the fall catches, next line. Chinook and Coho last fall. Chinook, 58% of the five-year average. Coho, 64% of the five-year average. That's all areas combined. That's with the new enhancements and everything. It's not even doing what it did on a five-year average. Next point's really important about our main stem fishery. In 2017, the gill netters had 65 hours of total fishing time on the main stem. Those few hours generated more revenue than a total select area of fall Chinook and Coho combined. And with recent NOAA restrictions, releases are being cut and are on a severe downward trend. Let's look at the main stem gillnet tanglenet revenue loss. I put these numbers together for you off the Oregon website. You can see 18 and 17, zero for us in the spring. Fishery, zero in 17 for a summer, and we don't know about this year yet. But if you look at 13 through 16, those were all policy years. And average, I added them all up, a little over 15,000 in those 4 years. Divided by four, 3,800 fish average in the spring. Average weight, 14 pounds, because they're an 8-inch and a tangle net combination fish. A little bit bigger average. That's the pounds times $12. You might think, well, $12 is crazy. There's huge demand for fish now. There's nothing coming out of Alaska. Cordova shut down for escapement. That's our competitor for this time of year. $12 a pound is a fair price for those fish. It was up to $15 a pound in selects, and the lowest it got was $12, and I just penciled in 12. There's $638,000. You go over to the main stem summer, what we had in those 4 years, you can follow it down. I put, there's your pounds, I put $9 on that fish, and it's what it is today in select areas, is $9 a pound. So add those two together, there's $1 million worth of fish based on those averages. And in closing, I'll tell you, I deal a lot with the Oregon Commission. They have no problem giving us a tangle net fishery in the spring, and at this point they have voted to allow us a 8-inch or big mesh fishery on this summer fish to get our allocation. All depends on you guys. So thank you for your time.
Thanks, James. Robert Sure. And Bryce.
Thank you, Chair Smith and members of the commission. My name is Bryce Devine. I'm from Longview, Washington. I'm one of the few guys from Longview. I know of two others that fish in the select areas in Oregon. Since this policy has been adopted, my fishery has had two basic legs to it. That's spring fishery in Young's Bay and the fall fishery that we've had in August. And if we get something later, maybe a little bit more there. Last year was an outstanding run in Young's Bay. It wasn't the best on record, but it was close. I had a pretty good spring. Fall was not so good. My income declined by about a third over 2016. This year, we're at right now, the returns in Young's Bay, or the catch in Young's Bay, is about half of what it was last year, and my returns are commensurate with that. And we're looking at a fall fishery that's projected to be very, very poor as compared to last year. This is a bad year. It's really bad. And as small as you say this summer fishery is, has potential to be, it's a significant improvement for me. It would be a significant improvement for me to have access to these fish. So, and on the, you know, I hear a lot of comments on conservation and so forth, and, you know, you're projected to have 63,000, 64,000 summer fish returning. And, I mean, it is concerning to have a low escapement in the Wenatchee complex here, the Aniat and so forth, but it's pretty clear that with these very large passages at Priest Rapids, the problem lies in the Wenatchee, not in the lower river, and it's not going to be solved in the lower river by eliminating this fishery or that fishery or anything else. So I really think this small fishery is very important to me, and I would hope you would give it really good consideration. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bryce. Randy Wolseley and Robert, good to see you.
Hi there. Thank you, Commissioners. Robert Sudar, commercial advisor and marketer from Longview. Earlier this spring, I provided testimony to the Commission and Oregon's about why we should be allowed to use conventional gill nets this summer to access our quota of 1,700 summer Chinook. I provided several reasons for why I thought that was the proper thing to do. I pointed out that summer Chinook are not ESA listed, nor are they in danger of becoming listed. Passage over Priest Rapids has been consistently twice the goal or more, ensuring that harvest priority for recreational fishing and tribal harvest in the upper river is provided every year. The largest non-treaty harvest of summer Chinook is in a non-mark selective ocean fishery. The Zone 6 tribal fishery is also non-mark selective. The mark rate has ranged from 40 to 60%, so the wild run is a large component of the return. There has been no increase in angler trips or license sales because of the policy, and in the case of summer Chinook, angler trips below Bonneville last year were at their lowest level since 2007. No alternative gear has been developed that is as selective at avoiding the listed species in the river during the summer season. Sockeye and steelhead is our conventional gill net. And in regards to that 2010 study, that was actually not a real big study. It was observers on two vessels on two nights in zones 1 and 2 only. And I believe with the size of the numbers that Mr. Barber was using, he multiplied that times deliveries. So that isn't really a clear picture. And where are the sturgeon in the summer? They're down in the lower estuary. If you look at sturgeon handle in the recreational fishery, 85 to 90% of the sturgeon they catch, they release because they aren't in the legal size. I mean, that's just the data that the state has on sturgeon fishing for recreational fishers. So that isn't really a particularly selective harvest, in my mind, in comparing it to what we do. So I disagree with how he's using that data. The Upper Columbia policy says the state will provide balanced opportunity to non-treaty commercial recreational fisheries, and an 80-20 split in itself is not a balanced opportunity. Staff's report for May agreed with all of my claims. I also pointed out that our fishery would kill fewer wild Chinook than the recreational fishery kills in its marked selective fisheries based on the 15% release rate. Staff not only confirmed this fact, they provided additional data that only 26% of the wild fish would have been tributary spawners. The remainder that we would catch and sell into the market would presumably be mainstem spawners. I'd like to point out that those wild fish would provide 8,500 meals to Northwest residents. And that's a lot more than the people, than the 260 emails you got. The public does not realize what you are doing to our commercial fisheries on the Columbia. The people that buy my fish, whether they're individuals, restaurants, grocery stores, they don't, I try to explain this to them. They think that you're managing with all people in mind. Policies like this clearly are not thinking of the general public. They're looking at one group. They're ignoring those people. Well, I'll wrap it up here since I'm using my time limit. There's no reason to deny a summer Chinook season this year so that commercial fishermen can harvest their assigned quota for the non-fishing public using traditional large gill nets, which have been repeatedly shown to be selective for ESA-listed sockeye and steelhead. And I'd like to point out that on the bottom of this table that we got, table one, it says that these goals in for these rivers in USV Oregon are combined wild and hatchery goals, and that WDF uses them as wild escapement goals. But in the policy, according to the footnote that staff put here, these are the combined hatchery and wild goals, not just wild fish goals, based on USV Oregon. So,
thanks, Robert.
Thank you very much.
Liz and Randy.
Chair Smith, Director Storr, Commissioners, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to come in. My name is Randy Woolsey. I'm a member of your recreational advisory group for the Columbia River. I've fished that river for, well, my entire life. I am a manufacturer's rep in the fishing tackle industry. So call on dealers throughout Washington and Oregon. And to some extent, I think I kind of represent those employees who make their living in the fish and tackle industry. Recreational fishermen throughout Oregon and Washington are very familiar with selective fishing, marked selective fishing. We do it for steelhead. We do it for coho. We do it for spring Chinook. We do it for summer Chinook. Maybe sturgeon are the only, they're not marked. So, unfortunately, our sturgeon fisheries have been severely restricted. We fish on, in the lower river, below Bonneville, we fish on forecast. And those forecasts before a season is announced are heavily buffered. So our fishing is very much restricted, as you know, probably all these facts you all know very well, and it has a tremendous impact in our business. Recreational anglers have been very supportive of the Columbia River reforms. We pay a fee for fishing the Columbia River for salmon, are happy to do it. Recreational anglers are very conservation-minded. It's one of the reasons why they take such pride in the selective fishing they do. They care about the resource and the future of these fish, for not only for themselves but for their children. So we would like for you to consider the Columbia River reforms that are in place. You know, we've all experienced the last two or three or four years some severe run changes. The fisheries have not been performing well. Both the recreational fishery and the commercial fishery experiences those downturns in the fishery. Those are the things that have the biggest impact in our harvest and what opportunities we have on the river, both recreationally and commercially. Many will probably come and testify today that they've had a pretty poor season. You know, that's what fishing is all about. Sometimes Mother Nature provides a big bounty, sometimes it provides very little. So, and we all have to survive on that, and it's what on us. So, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Heath? Hi, Liz.
Hi. Chair Smith, Director Storr, members of the commission. I have to ask you a question first. Is this on TVW? is it? My phone's blowing up asking what you guys are doing, and I keep saying, go to TVW. So a lot of interest in what's happening. I'm glad it's on TV. I want to correct a impression that was given to you earlier about how the sport fishing community feels about this fishery being marked select. My old friend, and yes, sorry, Bill, we're both old now. My old friend Bill and I went through a multi-hour long compact call where the sport fishing community, every single major sport fishing group in the Northwest, with the exception of CCA, who wasn't in existence back then, so imagine if they had been, were pushing to make this fishery mark select. And there were two reasons for it. The primary driver was the magnificence of a fish that makes it, enters the mouth of the Columbia and makes it to Canada. That is magnificent. And that was one of the main drivers for having a marked select fishery. People wanted to know that there was a chance that fish would make it there. And secondly, I think the vast majority of anglers would say to you, I'd rather fish marked select and have more days to take my family out than kill them all, big and small, for a short period. Now, we all have our preferences. This is America. We're all welcome to it. But the majority of the people do support having marked select fisheries on the river. This policy is working. I handed you the data from the fisheries that are caught in the select area on the summertime period. What I didn't bring was the history of all this to show you that over most of the years, if you look back a decade or more, the safe area fishery catches more fish than the entire sport fleet does all the way up to Bonneville Dam. The entire sport fleet. Now, in most years, they catch more combined in the fall fishery in the safe area, and that's just as it is. We're pretty ineffective. So we are troubled with this idea that somehow the policy isn't working. It's like there's never enough. So I would ask you, if you feel like you need to get to yes, let's find a less controversial way to do this. My phone's blowing up. Your emails are blowing up. We hear our customers over the counter because we sell your licenses for you. We have to listen to these people and what they have to say about this thing. And I'm telling you, this is really controversial. So I'm glad you're going to talk to the Covilles. I think you should think about different ways of getting there, i.e., you know, Washington doesn't have a lot of skin in the safe areas, and putting more high-value fish like spring Chinook, which have spread out into the summer period, so they're counted as summer fish, might be a way to get to yes without having things blow up on you. And then back to the hardship thing, I got to ride in the car for a couple hours today, and so I was listening to Natural Public Radio, I confess. And there's some economics out right now that if you make $20 an hour, you can't afford an apartment in Portland. So times are tough. And in terms of the economic hardships that Mother Nature has dealt us, they're much larger on our side than the commercial side. In terms of hatchery cuts by NOAA, much bigger on our side than the commercial side. So, you know, I'm sympathetic to the sob stories, but I can bring you thousands of them from our own industry. So I appreciate the opportunity today. I'll answer any questions you might have.
Thanks. It's all up to you, buddy.
Oh, man. A lot of pressure. Yeah. Chairman Smith, members of the commission, thank you. I guess, you know, I've invested a ton of time into this. I'm, you know, invested in it, disappointed in a lot of ways with how this policy has been implemented. I'll start first with a caution a little bit. This policy was developed through public process, months and months and months of public process. Draft policies that were made available to the public before they were brought to commissions, changes that were made to them before they were adopted by a vote. And I have to tell you, I'm a little bit concerned, very concerned, and I think the public is, about the movement to issue guidance that conflicts with these policies with much smaller amounts of public policy. To Liz's point, you look at the public notice for this meeting, and it would give you no idea the consequence of the decision that you guys are considering. And that really bothers me from a public process standpoint, and I don't think it's good for this commission long term. So that's the most serious I'm going to get, just because I think it is that serious. I'm also really concerned that after 2 months of considering this, no one has bothered to go to the Colvilles to ask them what their position is on this. I mean, I've sat down with Randy Friedlander, the head of their natural resources, and they're committed committed to bark selective fisheries because they know it's important to maintaining the hatchery production and recovering these fish. So the thought that no one would have gone to them after this has been in consideration for 2 months is really disappointing, and it's really concerning to think this commission might act before doing that in the first place. I'm left with the question of why are we doing this right now when the commission has an ongoing review? You guys are doing that right now, teeing up changes with this policy, and what we're doing it on is anecdotal data. We have people coming saying, well, the fish are smaller this year. Well, why don't we wait till the end of the year and then use that data to make any comprehensive changes that are needed to this policy? The only data we have is 2007 that's complete, and that painted a pretty good picture for how these off-channel areas work. So that's another concern I have. Moving forward, I'll just throw it out there. I mean, on selective gear and what's gone on there, what really is concerning to a lot of anglers out there, and it's nothing personal. People, when they're done with their professional life, are free to come in and be personal, you know, testify on behalf of themselves. But you had one of the staff members who was responsible for implementing this policy in the early years, for years and years, implementing the selective gear, implementing the buybacks, who testified here today pretty clearly with what his personal view is. And what I'm telling you is that out there, the view of the recreational fishing community is this policy has not been attempted to be implemented. And it's that kind of stuff that really reinforces it. So I really hope as we move forward in this policy review, you guys look at how things were being implemented and whether they, is it the fault of the policy or is it the problem with implementation, and how do we refocus on implementation if that's the case. So the other thing I'll say, I think you're opening up a huge can of worms. If you move away from marked selective fisheries for the commercial side, just expect the recreational community is going to want the same thing. So whether it's in the lower river or you, as you move up the Columbia, when you tell your recreational constituents, you guys have to fish selectively. But down here below Bonneville, they don't have to. And I'll tell you, it really fuels some real, feelings. And you mentioned this earlier. I think some real feelings of inequity out there between the upper river and the lower river. So that's what I have. I'm sorry for the serious message, but I've invested a ton of time into this. And, I think the policy may need some changes. I'd like to see a real public process to get there. So thank you.
I'm going to. I know you're up for the challenge, Heath, and appreciate your passion. I know you have put a lot of time and effort into this policy, and I completely get it. But here's a question for you. Let's assume, just for the sake of argument, hypothetical, that there was the same fishery, commercial fishery on the main stem, targeting summer Chinook. That would result in 389 hatchery fish caught and then 319 wild mortalities, okay, just hypothetically. I guess you'd end up catching more hatchery fish, but just say that hypothetically you're using a purseine gear. Why any purseiner would gear up for such a fishery, that we'll put that aside. But but just assume, that there would be that this fishery would take place with a beach seine or purse seine, and result in less steelhead and sockeye mortality. Would CCA be opposed to such a fishery?
Well, thank you for the commissioner question, Commissioner Kehoe. I think we really question a lot of the data, and I've spent years on this, that has been used on these mortality studies, the release mortality studies. And those same, the rates that you're talking about, which are the release mortality rates, everyone agrees that those studies were completely flawed, and quite frankly, nothing's been done to correct it in 5 years. Nothing. There was one attempt to go back to TAC and to try to fix it. Went nowhere. You want to know what happened this year when they had you guys directed? You wanted to answer the question. Are gillnets selected in zones 4 and 5? So you had observers last year. You remember that. So what happened is we got that observer data back, and then they went to TAC, and they used mortality studies. 6 of 7 out of them were non-gillnet mortality studies to substantiate a request to reduce the release mortality rate on those gillnets in question. So we question the data that is being used on all of these and have serious questions about it. So in the hypothetical, we would not support, a fishery that had a ton of bycatch and a ton of mortality as a result of it. I really question the numbers, though, that are being used.
That wasn't my question, but I can tell you've had some experience in Washington, D.C. by your response. So
thank you.
Well, Rick, we're...
Any more testimony? Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion, if I may. I move to instruct the director to work with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to implement a non-treaty commercial gillnet fishery in the Columbia River main stem using 9-inch mesh targeting 708 summer Chinook as modeled and agreed to during the 2018 North of Falcon season setting process. And there should be a second, I would like to speak to the motion. Okay, thank you. Just some written comments that I have about this. I'll try to be brief. According to the fact sheet prepared by the department staff, and some of the same data was presented today, and I'm talking about the fact sheet prepared in preparation for the May 18, 2018 commission conference call. The commission's Columbia River policy presumes the 708 summer Chinook would be taken by alternative fishing gear instead of gillnets. However, at the current time, there is no alternative gear that has been demonstrated to be economically or biologically viable. The same gear that has been tested would likely intercept more sockeye and steelhead than large mesh gillnet gear. Despite the policy's stated prohibition on the use of traditional gillnet gear in the main stem for summer Chinook, the policy does allow the department to consider such a fishery under the policy's adaptive management provisions, which I will speak to later. It appears to me that the large mesh gillnets are the best commercial gear option available for the commercial fishery to take the share designated for it by the policy. According to staff, the take of non-targeted sockeye and steelhead would not be completely avoided in the proposed fishery, but the incidental handling mortality of these non-targeted species would be expected to be minimal. The escaping goal for summer Chinook in the U.S. v. Oregon agreement over Priest Rapids Dam is 20,000 adult fish, which has been exceeded regularly and is expected to be exceeded again in 2018. While the returns of summer Chinook in the combined escapement areas of the Wenatchee, Aniot, and Chelan have been below the escapement goal of 13,500 adult fish, the proposed commercial fishery would have only a 0.47 impact on these run segments. This is a smaller impact than either the ocean, tribal, or freshwater wreck fisheries authorized in the 2018 North Falcon process. Finally, the adaptive management provisions of the policy clearly provide sufficient flexibility to the department to move forward with the proposed fishery. The policy states, in pertinent part, uncertainty exists in some aspects of the presumptive path, including the development and implementation of alternative selective fishing gear, the securing of funding for enhanced hatchery production, and the expansion or development of off-channel fishing areas. Under these conditions, adaptive management procedures will be essential to achieve the purpose of this policy. In my view, this much-talked-about adaptive management provision clearly gives this commission the latitude to move forward with the proposed fishery, notwithstanding any language in the policy to the contrary. I respectfully ask for your vote in favor of the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony, and staff for the presentation, and Bob for your motion. I am going to support the motion. The fisher are allocated by the North of Falcon process for the commercial fishery. We have not identified selective gear that is other than large mesh gillnets. I know gillnets. You know, I see the passion from Heath and from Liz and from the recreational fishers, but gillnets and mesh size and timing can be selective. Our monitor program last year demonstrated that in terms of bycatch. We have a calculated catch of wild salmon, so that's going to be taken into consideration. These were all things that were articulated by Commissioner Kehoe when he made his motion. A couple of things that I would request if the motion passes, and one is that we start working with the Colvilles immediately. Because I think there is going to be concern about the wild fish take in this commercial fishery. Secondly, that we consider the timing of this fishery as was presented in the concerns raised by the regional director, fish managers, that's going to be very important to the selectivity of this fishery.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I won't be supporting this motion. I'd like to give some history. I know everybody knows I'm a defender of upriver escapement and all that. I was part of the group from staff and commission members that last worked on the Columbia River policy with the Oregon Commission. And it may surprise some people to learn that when it was initially done in 2013, the intent was there would be no take of summer run salmon. If you look at that original policy document, there's a question mark there. There was no agreement because there were commissioners that did not want any summer run taken below Priest Rapids Dam on the Columbia River. It was I, if you recall, Bob and Larry, I was the one that said, let's go to 80-20 on summer runs as well. We've asked the commercials to sacrifice in other areas, and here's a gesture that will allow them to have a fishery on the summer runs. And now we're back here after 700 fish. I'm disappointed that the policy is being attacked piece by piece in this way without significant review. I think it's a betrayal of the intent of our constituents that supported the commission's actions in the past. I fully support the review that's in progress, and I believe that this action is premature and does not satisfy most of the constituents in the state of Washington when it comes to our fisheries on the Columbia River.
I would like to throw my thoughts, I guess, behind and agree with Commissioner Thornburn and Commissioner Kehoe in that I think it is time to use adaptive management for the reasons as stated. I also heard a lot of, you know, heartfelt testimony to the contrary, but I was around when the Columbia River Basin Columbia River policy was passed, and one of the things that made it pass was that we would use adaptive management, that if we got something not quite right, we'd have the freedom as a commission to adapt. And I don't know why it's so hard in all kinds of plans that this body creates to fall back and it becomes so written that we cannot adapt. And I really believe strongly in adaptive management. And I think we are experiencing lower than anticipated catch and economic expectations to the commercial salmon fishery on this run according to the plan. The plan allowed an 80-20% split. And that 20% split can't be met with what we thought we were going to use to catch those fish. It's not working. That's adaptive management. We need to make a change. If that change could occur over a longer period of time with more thought, I wouldn't be opposed to that. But this is where we're at right now. And The public process that led to this plan also included a huge component that allowed me as a commissioner to vote for this in the first place, that said, if we don't get it quite right, and if it's not equitable to all users, to commercial and rec, it could be the other way around. It could be rec fishing asking for a change through adaptive management because they weren't receiving their share as we anticipated. I would say the exact same thing. We should take a look at it, and we should adapt. So I would vote for the motion for those reasons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate all the testimony from the folks out here who have thought a lot about it and worked a lot about this, as well as the commissioners who may not have the same view as me. I do agree that it'd be premature to try to make policy changes now, and so I'm going to anchor my thoughts in the current policy. And when I went back and listened to the comments of all of the commissioners that voted for the policy on the day that it was adopted, many of them talked about wanting to make things better for the commercial fishery and did not want to eliminate the commercial fishery. So I think that made an impression on me. And I think that's the intent in the current policy. And it provides an 80-20 split on summer Chinook, so there's 20% for the commercial folks. So why say no to this? It's not alternative gear as because of the policy. When I look at the staff analysis, it shows that if we did have alternative gear, that being the only one tested and used in the area, it would be same gear, and it would catch 16 sockeye for every one Chinook. And so it appears to me that 9-inch mesh is better than alternative gear. It's the best gear alternative, or however you want to say that. So I can't get to no just because of that. Gill nets were supposed to be phased out, and they're not allowed for in the language of the current policy. It might be a reason to say no. But as Commissioner Caney mentioned, there's an adaptive management provision here. And when I look at that, on page 4 of the fact sheet, the first four things listed about reconsideration of state-managed mainstem fisheries may take place under the following circumstances. The first four describe the circumstance we're in to say yes. So that doesn't seem to be a no. We need more wild escapement. There's a 0.47% impact on some of these fish. And if we needed more wild escapement, then you get into some fairness issues. Why wouldn't we close the recreational fishery then? What about closing the ocean fisheries that take these? What about the tribal fishery in Zone 6? So they've been budgeted for in the preseason planning, so I'm having trouble getting to know there. So, you know, I've always said before that I think the more people interested in salmon, the better off the salmon are going to be. And so in this case, there would be some commercial fishermen, some buyers, some restaurants, and some other folks who would get some interest out of this fishery if it did occur. I do think that the matter of the timing of the fishery, which was not part of the motion, ought to be considered. And from my perspective, I'm ending up in a spot that does support the motion, and I think the fishery ought to be set after the commercial, after the sport fishery is closed. That was recommended. If there's any, if that goes as expected, then there should be no fleet-to-fleet competition. I think that would be a good thing. I think the staff ought to look at zones 1 to 5 and any of the sturgeon bycatch. They might want to look at that. But the timing in particular gets to this concern about the Idaho fish. And I would hope that this fishery is as heavily sampled as it normally is. There will be coated wire tag fish recovered, and that will show whether or not there will be Idaho fish present, it would seem to me. The timing in July was brought up by one of the gentlemen as being an A-run steelhead time frame. But those are the small steelhead, and so going from an 8-inch mesh to a 9-inch mesh, I think, gets there. So anyway, after mulling it all around there, I'm at a yes, pending what I might hear from other commissioners here that I haven't thought about for those reasons.
Any further discussion? Okay. Yeah.
Are we going to speak?
I'm going to vote.
Okay, I'm going to go last then.
My first meeting on this commission was in Ridgefield, January of last year. There was a whole bunch of people there, and this was the policy we were talking about. The reason that I'm speaking here today is to explain my vote. It is not to try to convince anybody that I'm right or change any minds. But I'm going to be voting no today on this motion. And this is what I want to explain. I had an epiphany on the Columbia River policy a few months ago when Commissioner Caney said, hey, we never intended to put commercial fishers out of business when we adopted this policy. It was like, wow, I wish everyone could just speak so plainly and clearly and have that kind of history, because I agree with that. I absolutely don't believe that it's my position on this commission to put one side out of business, much less, or even more, this pitting against each other is difficult to figure out, and it's tiresome for me. But what I do want to point out that I'm very sensitive to Irene Martin's economic observations. I've gone to those towns. Since I've been a commissioner, I've gone down several times just to look around, and it does not look good down there. And I was a legal aid lawyer for half my life. I understand economies. I actually am much more sympathetic to that than I was even to when we were worried about the Puget Sound Management Plan and whether people were going to buy boats at the boat show. Sorry, Commissioner Carpenter, but this matters more to me. The reason I'm voting no is, and the last thing I want to say on the reasons that I almost voted yes, is it makes a lot of sense. We have an 80-20 allocation, and we aren't letting people take their 20. That doesn't seem fair to me. So the reason I'm voting no is that I disagree about the adaptive management piece. This feels rushed to me. This is a central point in our policy. It's a big deal. Whether gill nets can ever be any kind of alternative gear, can ever reduce bycatch, is a huge question. When I came on the commission, I equated a gill net with the mile-long things that are out in the ocean, which just rape and pick up everything in the way. That's not what a gill net is. So I am not a person who is, as I've tried to figure this out, I'm not a person who disagrees with gill netting. I'm a supporter of the commercial industry. I wanted to listen to everybody because I really didn't want my vote to decide this today. But what I do want to say is that I think it's a central point of the policy. This has come up recently. We haven't talked to the tribes. I'm not positive that taking this adaptive management option will achieve our main goal, my main goal, which is conservation, so I'm going to vote no.
Yes, if I was going to speak, I'm just going to say the rush part is where I enter into it. I think there's some time to think this. And I would feel a lot better after we have consulted with our tribal entity partners. But I'm going to ask for a raise of the hands on this, so hearing all those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. You got it, Tammy?
3, 4.
Okay. All those opposed to the motion as stated, please raise your hand. You got it? Okay. Motion fails. So thank you, and I think we will have this continued dialogue, and it was a good discussion, and these are never easy votes. With that brings us to an end. 4 minutes overdue, so I will close the commission meeting today. We will, in recess, we will reconvene at 8 tomorrow.
That was my.
And tomorrow will be a busy day too.
There is a big tent coming.